Support for the Exchange Podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. As the novel coronavirus and the disease it causes, COVID-19, continue to spread, so do the economic impacts of this global health crisis. The U.S. stock market took a deep slide earlier this week in response, and here in New Hampshire, we're already seeing some economic effects, which could grow. We're checking in on this developing situation this hour on The Exchange. As always, let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour is Russ Tebow. He's president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. Russ, really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here, although I wish it was under different circumstances.
Absolutely. But, Don't we all? Yeah. And, you know, you were quoted in New Hampshire Business Review just recently, Russ, as saying, "Uncertainty is the enemy of prosperity." Explain how that applies in this instance.
Well, I think in economic terms, what we have in America right now, maybe a little over 1,000 cases of the virus that have been revealed. In a country with 365 million people, that's not a huge thing, and just statistically, if you freeze frame it. But what is significant is our sense of this is out of control.
Well, we don't know where we're framing those numbers, right?
Yeah, we don't know where we're going, and it's like walking down a dark alley in a bad neighborhood. We just don't know where this ends. Of the 1,000 cases, more or less, that have been highlighted nationally, a quarter of them surfaced yesterday. So the pace of this is remarkable. I think right now, Massachusetts is a state of emergency. In our neighboring state of Massachusetts, we have cases in the Lebanon Hanover area. And we just don't know really where this kind of ends. The stock market has really been battered over the last 2 weeks, coming off a record high in just a very short period of time, losing almost 20% of its value. So it's not so much the absolute numbers right now that I think are driving the stock market or discussions about the impact on the economy, but rather a sense of where is this going? It's the fear factor. I guess it was Roosevelt that said we have nothing to fear but fear itself, but this is a lot of fear.
And what's the fear economically? And again, we did a whole program last week with two of the state's leading medical experts on this, and we will continue, obviously, to focus on the medical aspects of this. But in terms of the economy, Russ, that's your expertise. What is the economic fear? Is it that, you know, many, many, many people will just not be able to work? Is it that many, many people will stop going out? Is it that, you know, people who are already economically vulnerable will completely fall through the cracks? Like, what is that fear about?
It's all of the above, Laura. For example, if schools close down, and we know that's happening, Harvard has announced, okay, when you go on spring break in a week or two, don't come back.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that it's really uncertainty about the impact on consumption. Are people going to stop going to restaurants? It's a double whammy economically because there's an impact on consumption. People are not going to travel as much. We know that already. People may not be going to restaurants, won't be going to sporting events. So there's an impact on consumption. Then there's an impact on production. The chain of supply is disrupted in China. Chinese production is down 37%. So it's a double whammy. It kind of hits us on the consumption side, on the spending side, and also hits us on the production side, manufacturing side as well.
And consumption is, what, two-thirds of GDP?
It is.
A lot.
It is two-thirds of GDP. And so if people really, out of fear, run into their rabbit hole and stay there, then that's going to have an impact eventually on production as well. So it's kind of like a snowball rolling down the hill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. And speaking of time, if you look at China, the virus began to surface maybe in December. And it's just now that the epicenter of it is kind of starting to stabilize. So that's been about 4 months. And we're just starting here in the States, in New Hampshire and in the United States generally. So the impact is still unknown. We don't know. If we close schools, what happens when mom and dad are both working and the second grader is now home? I have a son and his family in Hong Kong. And he's a professor at a university there. His wife is a high school teacher, art teacher, and his son is in grammar school. They've all been home for now 5 weeks. And the prospects are, there's no end in sight to it. And this is Hong Kong, which is really trying to control things and contain things. So
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that we're just at the front end of this right now. What happened in the stock market, as I've said on this show on other occasions, the stock market is a daily measure of people's sentiment and the sentiment of consumers. And that's saying people are really frightened.
Well, we have a survey, an audience survey at nhpr.org. It's been up for some time now, where we've been collecting listener questions and stories. So that's been great. Again, nhpr.org. Share your stories and questions. And on the economic end of it, a listener from Wilton wrote in, "I am a lot more concerned about the economic and political consequences of this pandemic than about my health or my family's health." Another listener from Manchester said, "I am concerned people will be on lockdown and people of limited income will suffer for lack of supplies." A lot of listeners mentioned canceled trips, which makes you wonder about our very important tourism industry. And a listener in Norwich wrote, "I have avoided going to the library and movies with my kids over the long weekend." So, in a way that sounds small, not going to the movies, but little things add up. Each
they
drop
do.
In the pond counts.
They do. In my own, anecdotally, I was in the market for a new printer. And there were only the particular printer I wanted, there were only two of them in the state, and they were in Lebanon. And I took the initiative to drive to Lebanon out of concern that there wouldn't be any restocking going on because production in China is, really curtailed sharply. If you look at Goldman Sachs did an estimate of the impact of it, and it's about a week old, which is eons ago in terms of the pace of this virus. But the initial impact is that we would have fewer exports to China because the Chinese economy is really suffering. That would be the initial impact. And then eventually that impact gets multiplied as our own production and consumption goes down. So they were looking at a softening of the U.S. economy, a steep softening in the second quarter. In the first quarter, which we're in now, and then in the second quarter, really going negative in terms of GDP growth in the country. So it's very pronounced. It affects production and consumption. We haven't had anything like this in decades. So the measurement of it is really vague, just as we're talking about the economy. Of course, the health impacts are primary, but think about banking. If the impact on the banking industry, if businesses are cutting down, closing restaurants, as you mentioned,
or not
the tourism.
Taking out loans. About a chicken and rice shop down in Boston. The guy was thinking about expanding into a second location, but now with this, he said, "You know what? I think I'm just going to make sure I can make payroll here at my downtown office."
It's really a matter of really a rippling effect. We know the stock market's been hit. We know the healthcare industry is suffering. And so there's a lot going on economically. It's secondary to the health impacts, but it's probably what most people are feeling now is that uncertainty, a direct hit on their 401k already, and they're wondering about, if my children aren't going to be able to go to school. Obviously, the nursing schools will also be closed. So that's maybe the next round of impacts that we can see on the immediate horizon. It's already starting to show up.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, the economic impact of the coronavirus here in New Hampshire. We're going to be bringing in several voices. Russ Thibault is with me in studio, president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. Later on, we'll hear from an exporter in the state. We'll also hear from the state's commissioner of the Department of Economic and Business Affairs. You can send us an email with your questions and comments about the economic impacts that you've been seeing. And again, you can also put your questions and concerns at our audience survey at nhpr.org. NHPR.org. And Russ, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now on the line is Kristen McGuigan. She's Director of Family Services for Families in Transition, which works with vulnerable populations. And Kristen, really nice to have you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, we've been hearing about global economic uncertainty, you know, manufacturing supply chains, stock markets. But bring it down to home for us, if you could please, Kristen. How is the economic uncertainty here in the state affecting the vulnerable people that you work with?
Yeah, as you can imagine, there's going to be a greater impact on the low-income families versus others. We definitely notice when there's national crisis occurring that it doesn't seem to worry or stress the low-income population that we're working with until it's directly impacting them. Of course, families that are experiencing homelessness and low income are definitely in survival mode to meet their family's basic needs on a regular basis. But again, I think as this crisis gets closer, like closes in more on New Hampshire, I do see that there's going to be a direct impact on the families that we serve.
What kind of impact, Kristen, are you thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think about school closures is the number one thing that we're definitely
sure.
keeping an eye on. You know, first and foremost is just children really rely on free and reduced lunches. So definitely needing to support families around needing to supplement meals. So really concerned about the increase in food insecurities. And then employment for parents. They're really going to be at high risk for losing housing due to not being able to, you know, gain their income or potentially losing their employment due to childcare barriers. And so we're worried about families' long-term goals of really gaining permanent housing. So for us, it's really monitoring those two things specifically to ensure that families can sustain.
Wow. You know, and I've been thinking about school closures and how that might affect people's parents' abilities to work. I hadn't even thought, Kristen, about the fact that, you know, a fair number of kids get breakfast and lunch at school.
Right, right. And so would have to... You know, our case managers are ready to really support all the families that we serve. If we get to that point, you know, what are the resources around that? But again, worrying about public transportation, you know, a lot of the families really use that as a main source to get to appointments, healthcare appointments, gain meals or food. And if that is impacted due to this crisis, then we have to figure out how to monitor that as well.
Wow. How do you view, Kristen, the current conversation going on now at the very highest levels in the country, including the White House, that if the wider society is going to have to ask people to stay home when they're sick or when they're quarantined as part of a broader group, there should be some support for people to be able to do that. You know, as you know, many people who work hourly wage jobs do not have sick care.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that that's the biggest concern, right, is that they won't be able to gain that income. And I think another piece, too, is that parents might have to go to work due to risk of losing their job. So kids might have to stay home alone, or maybe there might be situations they're staying with siblings or any other unpredictable care arrangements that could potentially be a safety concern too. So I worry about that piece for families as well.
Do you see any look at this idea of paid sick leave sort of more coming to the forefront, given again that people will be asked to stay at home, and some of those people will not get paid while they're at home?
Right. So absolutely. So we can avoid all the things I just said, right? So that if parents are able to get that sick leave, then they would be able to keep their kids safe. They would be able to continue to pay their rent, be able to get the meals that they need for their children. So I highly recommend that that's something that we think about to ensure that families, again, can sustain from this.
Is there anything that you at your organization, Kristen, are doing right now before this thing, you know, seems to keep growing and we don't know, so I don't want to be alarmist, but is there anything else that you at your organization are doing right now to prepare?
Yeah, for sure. So we've created a task force on site that's meeting regularly now to really be talking about prevention and education. Again, we're trying to not instill fear, but really, again, continue to figure out how can we have prevention measures. And that's including like getting our case managers really on board with being able to problem solve with every family and being available and figuring out what that might look like. We're also having a lot of conversations with parents about how they can talk to their children about this. We have a lot of school-aged children that are hearing about this and getting really anxious, and how can we support those parents to have those conversations with their children so that we can, again, provide that education and support for families.
Wow. Well, Kristen, good luck to you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
That's Kristen McGuigan. She's Director of Family Services for Families in Transition. Again, the number for you to join us with your economic questions and concerns about the economic impact of coronavirus is 1-800-892-6477. Join us by email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Russ, I'd love your thoughts, too, on, you know, Kristen explained it so well that people who are already vulnerable are going to feel economic impacts from this.
Yeah, if you go back to some of the surveys, about half of the country, half of the households in the country can't afford to deal with a $400 problem. So, and those...
A car repair or something.
It might be a car repair or a visit to the emergency room. Or so if you are at, the, in effect, the bottom of the skill set in the economy, bottom of the food chain, so to speak, you are right out of the gate more vulnerable because you might be working in the back room of a restaurant. So your job is not, whereas the extreme opposite would be a CEO of a large bank or something like that, not quite as vulnerable. But at, for those households that Kristen is dealing with, they are probably on the front line of this, and in terms of both its health impacts and economic impacts, because they're working in a situation where there is a lot of contact, maybe in a manufacturing facility, maybe they're working in a restaurant. So there's a lot of interaction, and that's sort of where the problem starts, is human interaction.
Well, and there's been a lot of coverage of that, including people who work directly with the public. I was reading something in the Washington Post yesterday about somebody who prepares the meals that you eat on the airplane, and this person was talking about going to work incredibly sick because he didn't have sick leave and he needed the income for his family. And it's just, it's almost kind of gross to think about, like, this person is preparing the food that you eat and he's quite sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look at the bigger picture as well, and you look at where we are heading into this. And I mentioned on the show in the past that if the country dips into a recession, we don't have a lot of tools to deal with it. Now, the Federal Reserve Bank dropped interest rates by 50 basis points, an emergency drop. I don't think that's going to have much of an impact because high interest rates aren't the problem here. The problem is people don't know what tomorrow holds for them. So we don't have much in terms of dealing with that issue in terms of tools, the traditional tools to deal with a recession. And it's hard to say that we're in one, but the probability is increasing.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So that's really interesting, Russ. So the usual tools, we see economic trouble brewing. Let's bring in some payroll tax cuts. Let's lower interest rates. Those are the usual policy levers that politicians use to, you know, make the economy feel a little bit better. In this instance, that's not a cough syrup that's going to attack the cough,
right,
so to speak.
Last week, last Friday, the job report was issued in the country. It was up 275,000 jobs, which is a phenomenally favorable number, but it had no impact. Last week, the Fed dropped interest rates 50 basis points, had no impact. If people are going to stay in their rabbit hole, and that seems to be what's going on, lower interest rates aren't going to make a big difference. If we're not going to be able to get parts from China, lower interest rates aren't going to make a difference. So the traditional tools to address an economic slowdown, which we are probably getting into right now, are just not going to work this time around. So we're kind of unprecedented pressures. It's kind of like, I thought of an analogy, and I think it's kind of like the sky is blue, but lightning is striking all around us.
Mm.
If you look at the economic indicators right now, they're all pretty good. But all across the world, lightning is striking. Italy, China, France, America,
well,
Boston.
And Russ, you just said, you know, if we're not going to get parts from China, certain aspects of production will just shut down. And of course, for the uninformed, myself included, I would think, well, can't they just make them somewhere else? But it's probably not that easy, is it?
No, you can't shift production that quickly. So already I think Apple's iPhone shipments are down 60%.
Really?
So it's a lot of the things we buy, of course, are from China, and production is really curtailed sharply there. And that's going to affect our consumption, which in turn ripples through the economy. So when a fundamental thing heads south, as is happening now in this economy, then the effects just spread right through the consumption and production and labor force side of things. And that's what's going on now.
And it's not quick and easy to shift production elsewhere. You need that expertise at the factory level. You need everything.
Oh, the skilled labor, the machinery and equipment. You know, much of production is robotic. You can't just all of a sudden
up and
shift it to maybe a different country. And now 35 countries in the world are exposed to the virus now. So no matter where you shift it to, it's probably just around the corner where the issues will surface there as well.
Well, that's so interesting.
Yeah. So it's really a matter that the traditional tools don't work. We don't know where we're headed. We don't know how bad this is. We know that it's changing very rapidly, day by day, hour by hour virtually. New things are popping up. So people are businesses are very nervous. They're not going to make the big investments. People are nervous. They're not going to go out and spend a lot of money right now. Just kind of hunker down and let's see where this goes.
Well, it kind of gets back to what you said earlier, Russ, that, you know, prosperity and certainty, or prosperity does not like uncertainty. Basically.
Absolutely right. Uncertainty is the enemy of prosperity. And that's the main thing right now, is it's all this uncertainty that is a cloud over the economy. And it's surfacing in a lot of different ways. The healthcare industry is probably first the stock market, then maybe schools. We're beginning to see big impact on schools and education, which in turn ripples into households. Next, probably healthcare. So a lot going on.
Well, we got an email from Peter in the Lakes region. He says, I just want to say that I work in the service industry, and going to work sick is the only option. He says, good day and thank you for your reporting. And Pete, thank you very much for writing in. And this gets to this conversation that is going on around, you know, again, if you ask people to quarantine for 2 weeks, you can't really say, and by the way, we're not going to pay you. I mean, it's just...
That's right.
I mean, I guess you can, but...
But of course, then it just ripples through economically as well. There's been some talk about some sort of provision of assistance for people that lose their, you know, that are laid off temporarily, lose income because of the virus. Coming out of Washington, there's some discussion. Washington has been caught short by this. Didn't expect it to be this kind of an impact here in the country, and it certainly is that kind of an impact. And it's not just in the Seattle area where there are a lot of people out of work right now that are kind of hunkering down, staying home. So it's more than just in an isolated area. It seems to be getting more and more diverse in terms of the geography of this issue.
Right. Well, coming up, we're going to talk to someone in the export sector so we can talk a little bit more about those supply chains that you've been mentioning. And also a little bit later in the hour, we'll have Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. So that'll be great to get his perspective on what his office is watching. We'll keep taking your questions and comments too about the economic impact of coronavirus this hour on The Exchange. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what COVID-19's economic impact might be here in the Granite State. We're hearing about manufacturing, to tourism, to healthcare, to those most vulnerable families. What effects do you see here in New Hampshire, or which ones do you worry about? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. NHPR has a listener survey, by the way, at nhpr.org, where for several weeks now we've been collecting listener questions and comments. Here's another one from a listener who says, nonprofit staffing can expect to be hit hard due to working with vulnerable populations and being at higher risk for contact with the virus. Are there any indications that financial help might be provided to help them continue to pay their low-wage workers who may survive week to week and who may be coming out of, and who may be out of work for extended periods so that nonprofits won't be financially ruined? I really want to thank that person for writing in. And Russ, this is, you know, many agencies who, as we heard earlier from Kristen, work with vulnerable populations. I'm also thinking of home health aides who work with the elderly and people with disabilities and so on. So go ahead. I'd love your thoughts on that listener's question.
Yeah, all interaction is vulnerable right now. So the people that are providing the support services in hospitals, for example, are very vulnerable to maybe being shut out of work. That's kind of the issue. Are people going to be shut out of work? And those that are shut out of work, how are they going to make it through that transitional period? This will end. But during the transition, it will be very difficult for some households to deal with it. It might be coming out of school children. It might be coming out of the fact that mom can't work or dad can't work because the factory's been shut down. Interaction is not there in a way that's helpful to those households. So there's a lot going on out there that we really don't really know about. But I think that the people that are in service industry jobs are most vulnerable in the short term going forward. And they are quite vulnerable.
Okay, well, thank you for that person for writing in. And again, NHPR's survey is at nhpr.org, and we've been collecting some really great questions, comments, concerns. This hour in The Exchange, we're looking at the economic impact of this. We have done shows on the health impacts and, of course, continue to do so. But for today, though, we're looking at the possible economic impacts and the impacts that we've already been seeing. We welcome your comments and questions by email, exchange@nhpr.org. or with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. And Russ, we talked earlier about manufacturing. I want to invite Klaus Luby with us. He's president for BioXL. That's a biotech company based in Lebanon that manufactures antibodies for biomedical research. And Klaus, it's really good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, hi, Laura. How are you doing over there?
We're okay. Thank you for asking. So I gave a brief description of your company, Klaus, but can you just give us a little bit more on the work you do? It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, we are a small biotech company here in the Lebanon area, and we produce monoclonal antibodies for research purposes only. And and those antibodies are being used for in vivo trials, mostly in mice, for the treatment of various diseases, be it a cancer, inflammation, autoimmune disease, and so on. And we are a supplier, a worldwide supplier, so that includes China and Asia, and for sure the United States. So we distribute or we sell our products worldwide.
So how?
And they're being used for those in vivo trials.
Sure. Excuse me for interrupting you there.
With respect, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Klaus.
With respect to China, I mean, we had a big goal for 2020 in terms of growth, because our business had been going or developing very, very nicely in China over the last 5 years, and this year started kind of unexpectedly disappointing. That, yes, the first 2 months or 2.5 months at this point were is very, very depressed. It's down by about 30%. And, I mentioned it earlier, we were actually approached by our Chinese partners and friends, like, could you help us out? We are running out of masks. And we tried to find some masks here in the Lebanon area, which was not easy. But we help them out. So yes, we see the depression in sales, definitely in China. I looked again, be it Italy or Germany or other countries, it's not that grave. And I think in the long run, we will overcome it. Another aspect is forget about making money and the economy. It's also for the advancement of science. It's really, really the center point of our thinking is meeting scientists, drive our scientific research forward. We were supposed to go to a big meeting in San Diego this month, and it has been canceled. It's the American Association of Cancer Research, a really important meeting to exchange results, to meet friends. And it's very, very deplorable that this meeting is not taking place. And most likely other meetings will be canceled as well. It's very, very sad. I just got a message from my Italian colleague. He says, Klaus, I'm so sad, but we can meet in San Diego. Ciao. Okay.
Oh, wow. So affecting your bottom line, first of all, you know, 30%, I think you said, Klaus?
Of our Chinese.
Of your Chinese.
Of our Chinese okay. sales.
And
So it can be absorbed at least to steady sales in the on the domestic market. But our Chinese sales, which contribute to about, they're getting close to 8% of our total sales. So it does affect the bottom line.
So, and as you said, not just your bottom line, but also your company's broader mission, which is to cure, you know, bad diseases. So
exactly. And there were so many hopeful things happening, especially in the immuno-oncology field where we are working a lot. So, I mean, it's not being put on hold, but the communication between scientists and people who are working on in this field is just a little bit interrupted at this point.
Klaus, just hold on a second. We've got Russ Thiebaud in the studio. He's an economist here in the state. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, Klaus, thank you for calling in. I was just going to ask you, are you doing or your peers doing anything particular in terms of protecting your employees? Is there what do you see going forward? Of course, we know this is a fast-moving situation.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's a good question. For sure, we follow all of the advice individually and personally that's being given on TV and the media, be it the personal hygiene and so on. But we had a meeting planned actually this week, this Thursday and Friday at Johns Hopkins. It was a kind of a meeting with scientists showing our, you know, our capabilities. And we said, do we really have to go there? Do we really have to expose ourselves, even if the chance that we catch something is really, really little? Let's just not go. It's not worth it.
It's the uncertainty and the risk.
We had our HR department sent a newsletter around what we can do at the workplace just to make it a little bit safer, a little bit more, I wouldn't say sterile, but more careful. And so that went around. But I think the meeting, the cancellation, that was a relatively big decision for us.
You know, there's been a lot of talk, Klaus, about employees working from home. In your environment, you know, I'm guessing you have some pretty specialized equipment and a pretty specialized facility there. How much can you work from home in your business?
I would say, I mean, we can work from home. Certain administrative functions can be done from home.
Sure.
Would consider it about 40%, 30-40%. But other things is we have to grow our cells to make the antibodies in fermentation, have to harvest them, have to purify them, we have to ship them. We have like every day 130 shipments going out. So we still need people here in the plant to do that work. But we can do it maybe to work from home for a transition or for a short period of time, but it wouldn't be a permanent.
To some extent, the nature of the work you do demands that you have, you know, access to, again, that specialized facility. Anything else, Klaus? It's been really interesting to hear from you, especially since your company works so globally. Is there anything else on the economic front that you are thinking about?
I mean, the economic front is more like how is this situation evolving or developing? I'm just looking at charts here, and it looks encouraging. I'm looking at China, and it's leveling off versus other countries like be it Germany and the U.S. We are still on the curve is still going up, and how is it being handled? Italy, for example, is also a market for us. and it sounds like everybody's being sent home. Nevertheless, Italy placed a big order last week, and we were actually concerned, is the FedEx driver delivering in Italy? And yes, it was. So it's a lot of unpredictable, I think, sides to this, and we just have to a little bit take it as it comes and work with it.
Well, Klaus, it's been really good to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking time out for us today.
Yeah, you stay well. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll do my best. That's Klaus Luby, again, president for BioXcel, a biotech company based in Lebanon. As we heard, it manufactures antibodies for biomedical research. Russ, that was fascinating to hear, and it makes me realize that, you know, some companies here in New Hampshire really have extensive global operations.
Absolutely. I mean, particularly exports to China and imports from China. That China, Klaus is right, things seem to be leveling off in China. But it's been 5 weeks, so it's going to take probably at least, I'm sorry, 4 months in China. It's going to take at least that long to get everything back in order. So that is the first round of impacts in terms of American production, is probably exports to China just really tank. And that's significant. As Klaus pointed out, 30% of his Chinese business has vaporized. And I think that's true for a lot of firms overall, that it's going to have a big impact on exports to China, now to Italy perhaps. Of course, the travel industry is already impacted severely. So
Germany has been hit as well, not as severely so far as Italy, but Germany, I believe, is New Hampshire's number one trading partner.
You know, I think, Laura, in 2 or 3 months, we can look back and say, this is what happened. Sitting here today, we don't know where we'll be in 2 or 3 months. So it's this uncertainty and risk that Klaus pointed out.
Yeah, well, it was good to hear from him. And again, listeners, we want to hear from you, your economic stories surrounding coronavirus, the impacts you're already seeing in your community, or the impacts that you are thinking about. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Rachel wrote in. She says, hi there, I'm listening to the show, and your guest mentioned that we might start to see fewer people going out. I work at a normally busy restaurant in Concord, and we've already been seeing a big difference in the last few weeks. Every day last week was slow, Rachel says, and I expect this week to be the same. Rachel says, I'm a single mom and rely on my tips to pay my bills and get by. Although my restaurant doesn't have any current plans to close, I'm already feeling the effects and worry about what it will mean for me and others in similar situations long term. Rachel says, a 2-week quarantine wouldn't be ideal, but I could make it work. But 2, 3, 4 months of shifts where I only make $40 could really set me back if I can't make my car payment, rent, my son's school fees, groceries, etc. I'm very concerned. Wow, Rachel, my best to you. And thank you so much for writing in. And this is what we talked about earlier with Kristen about, you know, some families are not going to be able to not work and not make tips and not get paid. They
exactly.
just are not able to do that.
And she's really the tip of the iceberg, because then she won't be going out. She will be, you know, won't have the resources. So it's the ripple effect that is hard to measure right now. We don't know how severe this is, how long it lasts, how broad it is. So that's what we're dealing with. And that's a great example.
Kristen, thank you again, and good luck to you. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. You know, Klaus also mentioned, Russ, that there were some conferences that they were going to go to. And I've heard a lot about this recently. People canceling large meetings, with the governor of Massachusetts calling that state of emergency. He said he was encouraging businesses to think about large meetings. You know, and for those of us that don't really go to large meetings, I don't go to a lot of conferences. What impact does that have? How big is the sort of conference going industry here in New Hampshire?
Well, it is significant. Particularly, we're getting into the prime season for that, which is really April, May, and early June.
People
after
tend
June,
to do it, yeah,
people are
in
on
spring.
Vacation. So it's probably, we will see cancellations, and it's going to hurt the accommodation industry because of that. I spoke last week at a conference in Manchester, and I said, you know, if this were 2 weeks from now, I bet you'd be canceling the conference, and that may well be the case. The other thing is, when you think of large events, sporting events, we're getting into March Madness season for college basketball, which is a really big thing nationally, and you know, the media coverage of it is spectacular. So if you're going to be playing basketball in empty arenas, I mean, that's not the biggest economic impact, but it's yet another sign of what's going on and how things are changing. So the conference business probably is really tanking right now. That's probably the next round of impacts of this. I don't envision that changing much over the next couple of months.
Wow. So we've heard a lot recently about the airline industry and people not flying.
Easy to get a seat, but yeah. You may not want it.
Yeah. The next step is this conference industry. Just walk us through the steps, because people may say, well, conferences, who cares? But just walk us through the important steps and people involved in that industry.
What you have is you have facilities, particularly in the North Country, that are very dependent on the conference business at this time of year, starting now, because the ski industry is winding down and the summer business hasn't really clicked in yet. So it's really, and organizations that are planning conferences, this is a time of year when their employees or attendees are most likely to participate. So this is the prime time for conferences, and it's a big industry in the state, particularly once you get into the White Mountain region, Conway region, Lincoln, Loon, very significant industry in the state. And this is a time of year, so if you go back to our caller, if you work at that hotel, you won't get called in for that conference. And so a ripple effect again because of that.
That's very interesting. It
brings a lot of money into the state, rooms and meals tax receipts. So it's significant.
It's interesting, too, because conferences are typically held, you know, in the spring. And that is what they call, especially in the North Country and in tourism in general in New Hampshire, shoulder season. There's no more winter tourism,
right.
But summer hasn't really started. So the conferences are a great way to have a big economic impact right there. Sort
exactly.
of easy peasy. You got 300 people there.
You know, one thing that is sort of maybe softening the broader economic impacts of this in New Hampshire and nationally is that we went into this downturn, this severe situation, in pretty good shape. So the fact that the stock market, for example, and I don't mean to belittle these impacts at all, but it could be worse is the point. The stock market hit a record high on a Thursday, and on the following Monday, it tanked. So, but it's given up basically 1 year's worth of growth, as bad as things have been. We've gone into this with a very strong economy, very good job growth, very low unemployment. That's not to say it's easy, but it softens the impact to a degree.
Okay, coming up after a short break, we're going to hear from the state's head of business and economic affairs. So Taylor Caswell will be with us, and a lot more of your input. So send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we've heard a lot about the economic impact of coronavirus globally. We're drilling down this hour into New Hampshire's economy and what effects we might see here in the Granite State. And we've been hearing from you. What economic impacts have you seen already in your community? Or what economic concerns do you have as this story continues to develop? You can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or an email exchange@nhpr.org. Helping me out for the hour has been Russ Tebow. He's president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. We've brought in a number of other voices as well. And with us now on the line is Taylor Caswell, commissioner of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. And Commissioner Caswell, we really appreciate you taking time out. It's an important story, and we really appreciate you helping us this hour.
Absolutely great to be here, Laura.
What impacts has your office been seeing already here in New Hampshire? Just before the break, for example, Commissioner Caswell, we took an email from a woman who is a waitress who says her tips are already way down. So what are you seeing already?
Well, I mean, yeah, we're seeing a little bit of that happening in the hospitality industry. Overall, though, from the standpoint of our business community, we're having an impact, obviously, from the slowdown in China. Their production is down pretty significantly, and a lot of our supply chains and component manufacturers across the state are starting to feel a little bit of that. But I think, you know, overall, we're working from a very position of strength. As you know, our economy has been really strong over the last several years, and that's serving us well in this situation, I think, so far.
You know, New Hampshire's economy, you don't need me to tell you this, Commissioner Caswell, two of the biggest sectors are manufacturing and tourism. We've talked throughout the hour about the impact on manufacturing of these disrupted supply chains. So how big a concern do you have about manufacturing, given what's going on globally?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're watching it very, very closely. And but I will say that we've had a number of other disruptions and volatility in our manufacturing sector for the past couple of years, maybe not sort of at the all-at-once sort of standard that we're seeing right now, but between the tariffs and the renegotiation of NAFTA, and in a lot of ways, the troubles at Boeing with the 737 MAX and how that sort of rippled through a number of smaller component manufacturers, we've got a really resilient group of small, medium-sized manufacturers in the state that are working hard to diversify their capabilities, to be able to find new parts and new ways to use the technology that they have in place to continue to sustain their operations and their employees and the work that they're doing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So we fully expect that to continue. On the hospitality side, I mean, on the upside, I guess, if there is one here, we are sort of slowing down the winter season right now and coming towards the season that's typically a little bit slower anyway. But for the local places, we're going to probably see a continued slowdown as people avoid public spaces.
Yeah, Russ Thibault was talking earlier about this is sort of shoulder season. You know, it isn't really winter tourism anymore, but summer for sure hasn't ramped up yet. And a time when a lot of hotels and hospitality-related businesses count on business conferences and the possibility that some of those will be canceled. I wonder what you're hearing or thinking about around that, Commissioner Caswell.
Those are the two areas that I think nationally we're seeing the most impact is on the international tourism and on the business travel side, conventions, as you said. Those are important, obviously, here in New Hampshire, but they are not even close to the majority of the marketplace that we really serve, which is much more domestic. We do have international tourism. A lot of that tends to happen in the fall, people coming to see the leaves and so forth. And honestly, we work with a lot of our New England states to market that to the international community. Anyway, so and on the business side, yeah, we see conventions here and there, but those are things that will have an impact. But by and large, those are smaller portions of the majority of the business we see.
Speaking of other New England states, Commissioner Caswell, what's your reaction to Massachusetts governor declaring a state of emergency, including the possibility of banning large-scale events?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're starting to see that sort of thing happening, and I know that Governor Baker has to make decisions based on what he's seeing there in Boston and across Massachusetts. We've got a really strong team with Governor Sununu and our Department of Health and Human Services that we're literally talking almost at this point, almost all day, every day, on all of these issues and monitoring the situation and making decisions hour by hour on what based on the situation that we see here in New Hampshire. So we certainly wish them the best in Massachusetts, and we're talking with all states and the federal government to do the best that we can to focus on safety right now and keep our economy going.
Yeah, so I wonder what else you're hearing from economic development officials in other states. It's good to hear that you work with, you know, Maine and Massachusetts and Vermont and so forth.
Yeah, we all like to compete sort of on a day-to-day basis, and you know, maybe sometimes when we're on the radio, but on the most part, we work together on a lot of these issues, whether it's tourism, whether it's sharing information about what's happening in our states and how we can work regionally, particularly in a number of different areas with things like the Northern Border Commission and other instances. It makes that feel a little bit better, particularly in situations like this.
I want to ask you about another policy matter related to this, Commissioner Caswell. This crisis, as you know, has generated lots of coverage about how many lower-wage workers do not have paid sick leave and therefore go to work no matter how poorly they're feeling, putting themselves and everyone else at risk. What's the solution to this, in your opinion, Commissioner Caswell? Nobody wants to eat a salad prepared by somebody with coronavirus or have their elderly parents cared for by somebody who is not well.
Yeah, I understand. And this is really a situation that where we're going to have to address this in some way. I know it's being talked about in the legislature. I don't know what the answer is going to be right now. We're trying to focus on the safety aspect and monitor the situation as this continues to grow. Obviously, it's something we're going to have to address. But what exactly is the right solution? It's really hard to tell a small pizza place that, you know, they're going to have to cover wages for somebody for a long period of time. And to balance that against keeping the business afloat versus, you know, trying to help the individual employees, these are really, really difficult questions that are going to be grappled with. And the best we can do right now is try to hope that we can weather this storm and come up with some solutions that we need literally by the minute. And help alleviate any of these types of situations.
That, well, you know, it really is by the minute. And I was talking earlier with Russ Tebow, kind of saying, you know, by the time, you know, tomorrow rolls around, the situation could be completely different. Here's a statement from Mike Summers, CEO and president of the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association. This is from New Hampshire Business Review. He said, "It is important to review your sick leave policies to ensure they are flexible, consistent with public health guidance, and that employees are aware of those policies." So I'm guessing this is something businesses are just looking at right now. Again, they don't want to be the ones that had that sick person and, you know, who came to work because they absolutely needed that paycheck.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of this type of thing, and I think this is going to be, at least given the sort of scope of time, which I'm hoping is not long, that we're talking about here, but we're on a trajectory. It seems like we're on an upward trajectory, but I think people need to use best judgment and show some empathy towards each other and try to work through this. It's an unfortunate situation, but as I said earlier, I mean, we have a lot of people working. We have a lot of people in good jobs. We have a lot of people who are able to work with their employers to find the right solution. And we're not in a period of time where we are in a down economy with a lot of people without work. It's just exacerbating the situation. So hopefully this is going to continue to be something where we'll be able to weather this storm and all work together on literally, as you say, on a minute-by-minute basis, trying to come to the best solution in every instance.
Well, Commissioner Caswell, it'd be good to check in with you maybe in another week or two just to see how things have developed. For now, I know you're a busy guy. I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you being with us.
It's great to be on and to talk about these important issues. Thanks, Laura.
That's Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. And another comment coming in on this, Russ. Dawn on Facebook writes, "Regarding your current program, European banks are giving their customers a 3-month grace on their mortgage if they are affected by coronavirus. If we did that in the U.S., Don says, it would relieve some stress for many folks who don't have paid sick days and encourage them to stay at home if they are presenting symptoms." Don, thank you. I had not heard about that. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I think he hits on a very significant point, which is the impact on banking and the banking industry and on us as consumers of, you know, holders of loans and what mortgages and whatnot. This, if the duration of this is 3 or 4 months rather than 3 or 4 weeks, it's going to have an impact on the banking industry as well and their willingness to lend, for example, which in turn affects the auto industry. So I think an important point here is that the duration of this is very significant. How long? And we don't know right now. If China is the precedent, we're looking at 3 or 4 months of disruption before things really flattened out. So I think that it's really a matter in the banking industry, a big impact that's right around the corner, and it relates then to consumers and loans.
Don, thank you for letting us know about that. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Other economic impacts, Russ, that we haven't talked about, and boy, we've covered a lot.
Right. I think the major impact right now in the short term, we haven't talked too much about the impact on the healthcare industry. Is
yes.
it going, if this gets...
Which is already short of workers.
Right. Short of workers. And even there was a comment on NPR this morning driving down to the show. Ventilators in the state of Washington for people that need a ventilator because this affects, you know, the lungs and whatnot. So the healthcare workers that are exposed to this. So the situation is it's very important to contain right now, to kind of make sure that the virus, which apparently is very contagious, not get throughout the whole economy. And the best way to do that is to limit interactions. And that's what we're seeing, and it's appropriate. I think it's important to not get overly fearful, but be realistic about the economic impacts of this, which stem right out of the healthcare impacts. So,
yeah, obviously. How about you, Russ? Has this affected your own business in real estate and economic consulting?
Not yet. That would be more down the road. I think that investors are a little more cautious now than they were. I think there was a little bit of blind faith a month ago that's not there now. I think I'm getting more questions. Should I go ahead with this project? That is starting to happen in the last week or so. A couple of my clients that were going ahead with projects are now sort of thinking, well, maybe I'll slow down. Maybe I won't dive into this right now. There is a sort of wait-and-see attitude that I think is permeating the entire economy right now in terms of business investment and banking industry right now. I think it's a matter of people are just being a little more cautious.
Okay.
Kind of a wait-and-see attitude rather than a dive-in attitude.
Russ, it's always good to talk to you, and I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope that this is a short-lived situation,
yeah,
and we can get
too.
Back to a more buoyant shows. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Russ. And Russ Thibault, again, he is president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia, an economic real estate and consulting firm. You've been listening to The Exchange, which is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our fellow is Jane Vaughn. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.